Today, property winners and losers across the ditch. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to Wally's Post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's show, we look in detail at New Zealand, where MPs appear to be the property winners, while many households are facing an impossible challenge of owning a property, and the ratings agencies are talking about rising house prices causing a stability risk to New Zealand's banks. So there are definitely winners and losers. S&P Global has released its mid-year banking outlook for New Zealand. They say that rising house prices pose a stability risk to New Zealand's banks. And it said that the sector was clawing its way back to normalcy, but risks were growing in New Zealand. Internationally, state intervention on behalf of corporates and households have worked, and banks had benefited, the report said. The net negative outlook for the global banking sector improved to 1% in June 21 from 31% in October 2020. As at the 25th of June 2021, about 13% of the bank outlooks around the world were negative. That was significantly lower than October 2020, when about one-third of rating outlooks on banks were negative. But the report highlighted a re-intensification of economic risk in New Zealand due to strong house price growth. The rate of house price inflation hit 30% this year, and on Friday, TradeMe reported new record asking prices. In New Zealand, economic trends recently reverted to negative from stable because of soaring house prices. Instructive is that this action reversed our previous move of economic trends to stable from negative only a few months prior, S&P said. While house price growth in New Zealand has been exceptionally strong, our action in New Zealand could point to the possibility of negative changes in other jurisdictions where it becomes challenging to reconcile house price increases with ongoing banking sector stability. S&P said that there was a 1 in 3 possibility that New Zealand banks could face a greater risk of a disorderly correction in house prices in the next 2 years, as opposed to an orderly unwinding if sharp growth were to persist. This could result in higher credit losses in the longer term, they said. S&P said government moves to mitigate risks to financial system stability from house prices had so far been less effective in restraining house price inflation than anticipated, and risks remained around the funding profiles of New Zealand banks. The bank's significant dependence on offshore short-term borrowing, the country's persistent current account deficits, and its exposure to fluctuations in commodity prices all make New Zealand vulnerable to external shocks, they said. And the report says an important factor now would be how successful moves were to restrain house price growth. Our base case anticipates successful regulation and government actions to curb house price growth. Measures include the reinstatement and subsequent tightening of loan-to-value restrictions, a tax-driven housing policy package, and potential introduction of debt serviceability restrictions in the coming months. If this is not the case, downside risks to financial institutions will continue to rise with the rapidly increasing house prices in the country. Sense Partners economist Rosie Collins said house prices were important to banks. 60% of bank lending is residential in New Zealand, so any bursting of a bubble will impact bank profits. But because banks test lending against income, and we have a fundamental housing shortage, it's unlikely banks will face widespread defaults if house prices fall. Banks are highly regulated and they hold a lot of capital. This means we can be reasonably happy that they can ride things out. More likely, the wealth effect is what will hit the economy. Homeowners will feel poorer if house prices go down, and so they'll spend less. If banks pull back from new lending as house prices fall, then we'd see a larger problem because new owners couldn't borrow as easily to purchase the house others can no longer afford. And S&P said New Zealand's economy was recovering more quickly than most, and real GDP growth should reach 4.6% in the year to December 31, driven by consumption and by investment. But of course, you've got the same old here. with the arguments about supply being the problem. No, 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 it's monetary policy, it's low interest rates, and it's too loose a lending. And unless that is actually addressed, the risk is to the downside, in my view. Now, elsewhere, the dream of home ownership is fading for many New Zealanders, and a new report has revealed 8 in 10 feel it's now impossible to buy a home. With a post-COVID surge in already high property prices, worry among New Zealanders is growing, according to the Kiwi Family in 2021 report, commissioned by One Choice. According to the data, 4 in 5 house hunters feel they are locked out of the property market, and 7 in 10 are losing hope that they will ever be able to buy their own home. This year, property prices surged and median house prices are now at an all-time high. As reported in the New Zealand Herald, the growth in the property market was one of the biggest stress factors for New Zealanders, according to the report. Graham Squires, professor with expertise in property and housing at Massey University, said housing affordability was a hotly debated issue. We can argue that there has been an increasing income gap between renting and owning, where home ownership is increasingly out of reach for low-income households, Squires said, stretching to the point that many young people see themselves as a generation of renters rather than owners. Squires said home ownership was unattainable for the majority of young people without support. Adding to the pressure is the social normalising that home ownership will increase social well-being. Despite high house prices, the report found house hunters were still keen to get on the property ladder. 7 in 10 said the biggest motivator to buy a property was to stop paying rent. The overwhelming majority, 93.8% of the 503 respondents, said rent was overpriced in New Zealand. Home ownership and rental concerns raised in the Kiwi Family Survey echoed those raised in the Herald's recent series Home Truths. Home Truths shone a spotlight on how unaffordable housing has become, as the typical Kiwi home now costs 8 times the typical annual household income. In Auckland, the average home cost is 9 times the annual salary, according to data from CoreLogic. The Home Truth series found 3 out of 4 New Zealand children were moving house at least once before they turned 8, and 40% of Kiwi children were moving house on a regular basis, and those renting were more affected. Owen Vaughan, the editor of NZME-owned listing site oneroof.co.nz, said first home buyers in Auckland and Wellington were often stretching their budgets so far there was little spare cash left over. Less than 50 Auckland suburbs have median property values under $1 million, and just 2, Auckland CBD and Rakana Island, have values less than $600,000, he said. 5 years ago, buyers could expect to pick up a home for less than $1 million in more than 50% of Auckland suburbs. The One Choice Kiwi Family Survey also found house hunters were not being unrealistic in their hopes for property ownership. More than 3/4, actually 83.1%, said they were not worried if their first home was not their dream home, as long as they owned the property. And more than half of the respondents were making sacrifices, such as cutting back on their lifestyle expenses, and 1/3 were pooling resources with their family or friends to buy a home together. Despite low expectations when looking for their first home, the report revealed first home buyers wanted the same thing when it came to buying a house. Good value was the number one consideration for 70.5%, closely followed by living in a safe neighbourhood at 67.5%. As well as highlighting the struggle to get onto the property ladder, the One Choice survey also revealed 43.4% of New Zealanders were concerned about living paycheck to paycheck. About 2/5, or 41.1%, were concerned about the future job market security and stability. And more than half of the respondents were concerned wages were not keeping pace with the cost of living. The report, though, did reveal some positive in New Zealand following the recovery from COVID hit 2020. According to the report, the challenging events of 2020 had a positive impact on families. More than 2/3, at 68.9%, of whom said relationships between family members had improved despite COVID-19, and 6 in 10 believed that they had become much closer to family and now spend more quality time together. People with children at home agreed the pandemic has improved their teamwork skills. 3/4 said, as parents, they have become dynamic duos. Most respondents said there was no change to their plans to have a baby, but 1 in 7 saw a need to delay starting a family because of COVID-19, related safety, 33.3%, and economic reasons, 29.6%. There was less hesitation to buy a fur baby to the family. However, almost 1/3 of people said they'd either bought or adopted a pet or planned to do this in order to test the waters before having a child. And so far as property is concerned, the winners are MPs who've pocketed $50 million in capital gains from their property interests in the last year amid a growing housing affordability crisis, according to analysis by Stuff. They say it represents a significant increase in wealth for many elected representatives, around 95% of whom have land or property interests. The vast majority of MPs are accumulating more wealth from their properties than from their salaries. The median MP has made a capital gain of around $330,000 New Zealand dollars in the last year, $237,000 of which occurred in the last 6 months. That's a larger gain than the minimum annual salary for an MP of $163,000. And a lot of it came from urban centres where they have significant property stakes. Their analysis found MPs have interest in at least 256 properties, an average of more than two each. It shows while first home buyers and low-income owners have struggled to penetrate the market, most MPs are enjoying windfall capital gains. As of July 1, those properties had a combined estimated market value of $356 million, with a median value of $1.01 million. That's slightly above the national median price, but given most MPs own multiple properties, it means the median MP has property interests worth significantly more than the national average at around $1.76 million. New Zealanders have become increasingly concerned about the housing market, which has become the least affordable among peer nations. Public polling shows most New Zealanders believe housing is the biggest issue facing the country. And although the government has said it wants to slow the rate of house price increases, it has not said it would like house prices to fall. The government has also ruled out implementing a capital gains tax, preserving a status quo, which means most property gains are untaxed. National and ACT also oppose a capital gains tax, by the way. Property demand continues to outstrip supply, driving record median prices even higher. And in Auckland, where the average house price is more than $1 million, there's also a jarring number of empty derelicts. Given the role of Parliament, and more specifically the government has, on influencing the housing market, Stuff has examined the property interests of the country's 120 MPs to determine how their private economic fortunes have been affected by the housing affordability crisis. According to recent Reserve Bank data, the average household owns housing and land worth around $1 million. And by the way, an important caveat, that figure excludes rental properties, so the comparison is not necessarily apple to apples, but it gives us a rough point of comparison. This represents an even increase in wealth at the same time a year earlier. Properties were worth $306 million. By January, they'd increased to $321 million and then to $356 million in July this year, an annual increase of 16%. Based on the last 6 months, the annualised rate of growth sits at 22%. The true figure is probably likely higher than this, because capital gain can only truly be calculated when the gain is realised, i.e. when the property is sold. Residential property, a reasonable estimate can be made, and they used mid-range valuation estimates from property website homes.co.nz, which is based on nearby sales valuations and other data. But it can't be done for farms and commercial properties, which are not driven by the same supply-side constraints as residential housing. For that reason, they cannot estimate capital gains, but have included their latest rateable values in their figures. Now, if we remove those from the equation entirely, MPs' properties rose in value by 23% in the last year. In the last 6 months, that rate has increased to an annualised equivalent of 29%. But for a parliament that is historically diverse in matters including gender, ethnicity and sexuality, it's almost monolithic on property ownership. Only 7 of the 120 MPs have no declared interests or otherwise obvious property interests. So there you have it, in a nutshell, the haves and the have-nots. And given the conflict of interest clearly that MPs have with regard to property trajectory, it's not surprising that there is confusion. And by the way, you can make the same argument over here in Australia too. There are some major winners, but there are also a large number of losers. And unfortunately, those in political positions of power, and by the way, also corporate power too, are the ones benefiting from these very high home prices. Whereas ordinary households, both in Australia and New Zealand, continue to struggle. Their cash flow continues to get compressed. And certainly the latest data that I'm looking at suggests that in both countries, the financial profile of many households is actually decidedly negative. And that's despite all of the waffle about how well economies are bouncing back after the virus. The bottom line is this: using housing to prop up the economy and lending ever more to households to chase higher values is ultimately destructive. It tramples on ordinary people and leaves them much worse off. That is the truth, but it's a truth that many people in power just will not accept. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.